on 2FM with Green Farm. Being up to 90 isn't real. The protein in our range is. Get real.
Thanks to Laura Fox, it's Monday the 31st of January. In other words, it's deadline day, and this is Game On. Coming up today, Fergal Brennan with all the latest transfer news as Christian Eriksen returns to the Premier League.
It is Eriksen, off the bar and in! Spurs are ahead! Just what Tottenham Hotspur needed. They needed that first goal, and it's come courtesy of Christian Eriksen.
In tennis, Rafa did what everyone thought Novak was going to and made Grand Slam history with an Australian Open win for the ages.
Good evening, everyone. Well, good evening. No, good morning. Being honest, 1 month and a half ago, I didn't know if I will be able to be back on the tour playing tennis again. And today I am here in front of all of you having this trophy with me. And you really don't know how much I fight to be here.
Plus, we former dub Barry Cahill on the Allianz League action, Jeff Shepherd on more NFL drama, and thanks to Aldi, we have shopping vouchers and the Six Nations trip of a lifetime to give away. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
So, Marie, we're going all romantic this week and we're going to show our listeners some love and give them the chance to win an unbelievable prize thanks to Aldi. We want to send you to the most romantic city in the world, Paris, of course, where you'll get to express your affection for the one true love you have in the world, the Irish rugby team. You could be there to see them take on France in the Guinness Six Nations at Stade de France on Saturday, the 12th of February.
Wow, that's exciting. Thanks to Aldi, we've got return flights, 3-night hotel stay and tickets to the big game. It's all to celebrate all Aldi's 149 stores having everything you need for Valentine's. From that perfect romantic home-cooked meal to cute cards, fabulous flowers and much, much more. And if you're like me, it'll be great because you'll save time. One-stop shop.
It surely is that. So here's how you could be given a chance to win this amazing prize. Have a listen to this clip and answer the following question.
CJ Stander under pressure, but it's Ireland to have control of it. Midway between the France 22 and the 10-metre line. Some of the attempted drop a goal from outside the 22. Going towards the post. It's gone towards the post. It's over. Ireland with the drop and goal. It's gone between the post. The drop. The ball has gone. The fellas are literally on top of each other. Away to the left-hand side. France have been absolutely destroyed with the final kick of the game. A drop and goal. France have been robbed of victory. 82, 83 minutes gone. At the Stade de France, the place has gone mad.
You know, it's just dawned on me, if you and I were really clever, because this is an amazing prize that Aldi are putting on, like, we should have some really difficult question that only you and I know the answer to, and we should be going to Paris. But no, we're going to be kind. Aldi want everyone to get involved. So the question is, which Irish player scored that drop kick winner against France in 2018?
Also, Ruby, there are rules as well of the competition that we have to outline to anyone that is entering. So text your answer and name to 51552 and then we'll pick one correct answer randomly each day and that person will get themselves a €50 Aldi gift card and a place in Friday's draw for the trip to Paris. So as always, RTE competition terms and conditions apply. See 2fm.ie. They also apply to Ruby Walsh over 18s only and you've got to be able to travel on the 11th of February. So good luck, everyone.
I can travel on the 11th.
You'd be busy with Cheltenham. Would you go away or that?
I can. I swear I definitely could travel to France on the 11th. Just cancel new.
Maybe somebody will bring you. There you go. Yeah. If somebody wins, they might bring you along. Gillian can enter.
Yeah, can she? As I suppose.
Maybe.
Maybe we should read terms and conditions we're talking about.
Yes, actually, please do go check them out before you enter.
I'd say it excludes yourself and myself, Marie, and probably our spouses. Anyway, it'll be a great win for somebody and thank you very much for Aldi for giving it to Game On. It's an amazing competition. So Marie, the weekend in the Crow household. Clare win, so Marie is happy. Leash win, so Billy is happy. Dublin get beat, so all three boys are disappointed. It must have been a kind of an up and down weekend in your household.
We all went along actually on Sunday to Leash and Louth up on RD. It was a great day out. Brought a load of the lads' friends as well, Dub supporters. But yeah, my lads go for Leash now when the games are on. They want to make sure their dad's happy. But they also the Timmy, the eldest fella, had a big win against Shamrock Rovers, 4-3 under 10. So everybody was happy, really.
For
Templeogue United.
Templeogue down Shamrock Rovers.
It was a
big
one. That
should have been the headline, Marie.
Yeah, I know. We should have led the whole show off with that. That's twice now they've beaten them.
So how is life of an inter-county club manager now the league has started? Is it all just heating up?
It's busy, definitely busy, but it's enjoyable. I think he's enjoying it anyway. He's definitely spending.
I didn't ask you how he was getting on.
Grand, sure. Look, once he's happy, I'm happy. That's it. He's out training and taking that bit of time for himself. So, look,
watching,
you know yourself.
Replays of Leash versus Loud.
Lots of analysis, yeah, lots of that sort of stuff, but I leave him to it. He's a really good excuse to do it all the time now, and I can't be giving out to him, so he's happy enough.
Not so bad. Did you watch? You obviously didn't watch the tennis then yesterday morning.
Did I watch the tennis? Not yesterday morning, no, I didn't. You did, obviously.
I was having a discussion with somebody else today. I had something to do, so it was on, and I left for a couple of hours, and I came back, and it was still on, and I watched the end of it. But it was incredible, I must say. What a sports person, Rafa Nadal. Incredible. 35 years of age, 5.5 hours on the court, and it was brilliant to watch, and it was brilliant tennis as well. I mean, obviously we'll talk to Conor Nylander hopefully later on in the show. Medvedev, bit of youth on his side, was so much faster in the early sets, but Rafa just wore him down. Age and experience, it was a win for the old lads. It was brilliant.
Yeah, I watched it this morning, and I suppose going into it, I don't think anybody thought, even himself, he said that he didn't think he was going to be able to go out and, as you said at the start of the show, do what everybody expected Novak to do. It'll be really interesting, though, to see where he goes from here. So he's got that number now. He's got the 21, and Djokovic will be chasing him down. So
But he's always going to be the one that got the 21.
But does that matter if you're not winning, though? So if Novak gets to 22, does being the guy who got to 21 matter?
Well, I think the French rules, have they changed since I last tuned in? Will Novak be a Roland Garros?
Well,
I don't know.
He could be, because things are starting to settle down now around the world. So yeah, countries are beginning to open up.
It'll be interesting. Be interesting to see what happens. But look, it was brilliant for him, and we know clay suits Rafa better than the hard court, so hey, he's back playing, back winning, bit of confidence from it. Who knows? Slower court will definitely suit him in Roland Garros than the quick court suited him in the Rod Laver Stadium the other night, but he still managed to win.
Well, he is Rafa.
He surely is that.
So what was your sporting highlight? Was that it?
That was it, without doubt, my sporting highlight. Could have been in Newbridge yesterday if Kildare had managed to pip Kerry, but I still had a magnificent start for Glenn Ryan and his management team to get a draw against Kerry. I think from a Kildare point of view, that fitness, structure and appetite, that bite, that belief, they definitely seem to be after instilling that in his team. And it's great to see Daniel Flynn playing so well, and it's just great to see Kildare with hunger.
I know people say stop talking about the crowds, but I'm actually loving all the crowds back. I saw already today Kerry in Dublin for next weekend is sold out, and the appetite to go to games is phenomenal. Like even up in RD on Sunday, I don't know what the crowd was, but there was a huge amount of people there. And even when I was driving up towards the pitch, cars abandoned the whole way up the sides of the road, like lads in driveways and pitches and or in fields and everywhere. I'm just loving that part of it.
You surely had a reserve parking spot.
No,
No,
it doesn't work like that. I'm just a person going to a match with six children in the back of the car, hoping I don't lose any along the way.
I hope it's big hammery.
7-seater, it's fine. But yeah, no, I'm loving that. I'm actually really enjoying going around to the matches, even though it was lash and rain, it was freezing up there, and the kids were playing hide and seek, and I didn't know where they were from one end of the match to the other, but it's just great to be out and looking nuts.
I saw that with the crowd in Newbridge yesterday. Obviously the game was delayed, but with getting the crowd in, but to see St Conan's Park just wedged and getting behind their side, it was wonderful to watch, and it was great to see the team almost deliver for them. But I suppose for Kildare people, you'll take a draw against Kerry every day of the week.
Yeah, for sure. Well, unless it's in the All-Ireland final, then that could be a whole other story.
Say now, if you offer that up right now, I doubt you'd find too many Kildare people that would say no thank you.
I don't know.
Draw the All-Ireland Final with Kerry. That means you have to get into the All-Ireland Final, Marie.
Yeah, but you'd want to win it.
But
I know
a
draw
has to win
is
in
not.
The end. We didn't get any further.
But you didn't offer me that now. You just offered me the draw.
The draw, yeah. Take the draw. It means you're there. Have to go with extra time then.
Yeah, okay. Right, we'll park these
hypotheticals. In July, what's your disappointment?
I know, yeah. It's going to be over before we know it. Have I said that on air yet? Because that's what I'm feeling, and I'm saying it all the time.
Oh, don't worry, you said it to me often enough.
Okay, let's move on, and we will talk to you a little bit later with Barry Cahill, former Dublin player, and we'll be getting his thoughts on what is going wrong with the Dubs and what will the future hold for them. But now we're going to turn our attention to soccer, because there was great excitement in Cork and actually pretty much around the country, really, because Cathal Heffernan, who is the son of Robin Marion, two Olympians who everybody knows, big characters in sport, brilliant sports people and great ambassadors for the country for two decades now, maybe even a little bit more. So their son Cathal is on the brink of a move to Italian giants AC Milan. So he's only 16 years of age. He plays for the Republic of Ireland and Cork City. So he's awaiting FIFA clearance for a loan move to Italy with a permanent deal expected in the summer. Well, Tony O'Donoghue was dispatched to Cork to catch up with the Heffernan family. So first of all, he spoke to young Cathal. Let's hear what he had to say.
It's great. Like, I've been, ever since I heard the news, it was just buzzing. Like, you know, I can't. Like, at times it just doesn't even feel real. Like, it's a dream, like, for me, you know. It's, and hopefully, like, I'm just raring to get started now.
No, transfer deadline day, so of course we're just waiting for the final details, the I's and the T's to be dotted and crossed and whatever they say. How's it been for your parents?
Oh, I'd say they've been up the walls. Like, it's been a stressful few days for them now between, you know, just getting things organised and stuff like that. But it has, like, they've been so good to me. Like, they've, like, my poor dad there, he's been stressed out of his head, like.
But listen, the journey to here so far, I mean, you've been playing sports all your life, of course, but when did the soccer become the number one?
The soccer only became number one a few years ago. Like, I'd say when I was maybe 13, because when I started getting into, like, the international squads and stuff like that, like, that's when I kind of realised that, no, look, I think I have an opportunity here and I think I have a chance. And from then on, you're just full steam ahead at the football. But, no, I was always, you know, very sporty when I was younger.
And the fact that you visited a lot of clubs around Europe recently, what was that experience like?
Oh, it was brilliant, you know, and I think that's the main thing. Like, I'm going to really take that into my stride when I do make the move, because it has helped me, like, and I think I've matured and I think I'm ready to make the move, because it has definitely, like, all the experiences, you know, it's time to put them into practice now and use them, like.
Cathal Heffernan there speaking to Tony O'Donoghue, very composed for a 17-year-old, isn't he?
Extremely composed, and I suppose, Marie, if he's going to make the decision to move to an Italian club, he's going to have to learn a language, live in a new country, etc., state and all the obvious things, but you'd have to be mature to go and do that and be able to make that decision. And I'm sure Marion and Rob have to be happy that Cathal is mature enough to go and do those things. And obviously they are. But I listened to Tony just mentioning there that he had been around a couple of clubs in Italy last summer. And that was organised by Stephen Ireland. And that really changed my opinion of Stephen Ireland. I looked at him when he was playing as an international for Ireland and some of the poor choices he may have made and how he's now trying to help younger players and not make the same mistakes as he made himself. That's what I read it, and I kind of thought, wow, there's a guy who probably maybe wasn't mature enough to do all the right things himself, who's now trying to help others. And it definitely brought Stephen Ireland up in my estimation when I read that about him today.
He's got a son as well who's around the same go as Cathal. Joshua is his name, and I think he's played a couple of times for underage Republic of Ireland teams. I'll check that out. But he obviously, as you said, has learned so much from his own experiences and has an awful lot of knowledge to impart on young players coming out of Ireland. And it was just interesting, Rob has been speaking about him in the past and they're really good friends now. He comes and stays in his house in Cork, and I'd say they're travelling around now having a lot of crack going to all these European clubs. Not a bad old lifestyle either.
No, exactly, not a bad lifestyle, but isn't it a great window of opportunity for Irish players, the continent? The door in England looks closed and the continent is open, I suppose.
Yeah, so Kevin Zeffie, we've spoken about him quite a bit as well from Shamrock Rovers. He moved over to Italy to Inter Milan, and then defender James Abankwa also moved over. We only spoke about him last week, so the two of them are going to be in Italy as well with a Banqua in Udinese. So we'll be watching our Italian football a whole lot more for sure. But what was found really interesting, and look, maybe our listeners will be able to put me right, is that Cathal Lonely really started focusing on football 3 years ago. Now, there's so much debate and conversation about early specialisation and when's the best time to focus on one sport. But 3 years at focusing fully on football and heading off to AC Milan doesn't look like a bad return.
No, it doesn't. And I don't know, I'd be a massive believer in allowing children and kids the opportunity to play everything. And it does frustrate me when, as a parent now, when training starts at one sport and it's encroaching on what is another sport, and everyone clambering to get the kids into one gig. I think it should be fun, and they should be allowed to play as many sports as they could. I ended up a professional jockey. Now, I always had a pony, but I played every sport until I was 16, until I had to pick riding racehorses. And I made a pretty successful career out of being a jockey, only concentratedly solely on it from the age of 16. So, and I played rugby actually till I was 17. But I'm not. Look, obviously there is the Williams sisters, and there's Andre Agassi, and there's all those stories you hear.
Tiger,
yeah. But look, there's all the stories that go wrong that you don't hear. And I think it should be enjoyment, and kids should be playing as many sports as they can so they'll play on into their adult life enjoying sport rather than quitting everything when they're 16.
It doesn't seem to have done him any harm anyway with the way that he has been progressing, but he definitely has great role models in Rob and Marion to keep him on the right track and to advise him. And when you think about genetics and environment and just knowledge, he's in the perfect place really to be able to make those right decisions. Like, he's really lucky that he has people surrounding him that are really knowledgeable on training practices, high performance, nutrition. It doesn't get better than that.
No, it doesn't, but expectation, and that's what his life probably always has been as well. I mean, both Rob and Marion, as athletes, you're pretty much an individual. They can be lonely enough, I'm sure, both of their sports at times. And, they'll have managed highs and lows all through their lives that Cathal will have witnessed and seen, and it will have him on a level footing. But he has to go and make his own career now. He's not going to get a contract in or get on the first team in AC Milan because he's two athletes' son. He has to make his own life, and it'll be a big culture change for him, and you wish him all the best. It's great to see him to be brave enough to go and do it.
Totally. Well, let's hear from Marion and Rob, Tony O'Donoghue, who also caught up with them a little bit earlier.
It kind of hasn't settled in yet, you know. It's been a couple of weeks now in the making, and we're kind of down to the business end of it now, and it's yeah, it's been mad, and it's you know, he's put in so much work over the last year, you know, trialing and, you know, playing international games and playing games of City, and it's just everything now has kind of led to this now. So it's, you know, as soon as everything is signed, we'll start to you know, let it sink in for us.
Is the bag packed?
It is. Both are. Yeah. So yeah. So we're just waiting for the call now, and the flights will be booked, and he'll be on his way. Like, so yeah. It's
and for your baby to be going away at such a young age, as mature as he appears to be, that's a big wrench, isn't it?
No, it is. Do you know what? I think the soccer world now, it's, you know, it does nurture them, you know, and they, you know, he's going to be provided with a school. As he said, he's a good friends over there. They're in contact with him since he'd been on trial there last year. So even now, he does have a connection to the place. So, you know, it's all you can do is put him into the environment and hope he goes. And it's, you know, what better place to learn or cut your teeth than AC Milan? Like, so he's been very fortunate in the sense that he's got through, you know, pathways in Cork City and with the Irish team. And now, you know, he gets to go the next step. So who knows?
And Rob, for you, you've been over there, of course. And did you get a good sense of the place, a good vibe?
Yeah, I think they're all good now. Like, all of the clubs that we went to, the facilities are brilliant, the coaches are brilliant, the environments are brilliant. So it's where his gut instinct is then, and I think just getting him into that environment and developing, I think he'll do really, really well. And I think he knows exactly there's no glamour to that lifestyle, you know. And I think he'll do really well, like, because he's gone through a lot in the last couple of years, and he's progressed really well internationally. He's been on a lot of trials. The Brexit thing was obviously a big blow at the time. So with Stephen Ireland's help getting contacts in Europe and being to them clubs, and a lot of them came really close, and he's gone through a lot of disappointments as well. And I think he's a really good attitude in the sense when he goes away and it's like, no, if I show the best version of myself and I do really well, it's out of your control. And he's been really good that way. And we probably did more travelling last year during the pandemic than I did through all my athletics career. And it was a massive learning curve for all of us. Mm.
That was Rob and Marion Heffernan speaking to Tony O'Donoghue. Now, Fergal Brennan, journalist, joins us on the line as well. Fergal, listening to the Heffernans there, you can see there's so much excitement about the move. But listening to Rob too, you could tell that there was a lot of worry when Brexit was happening. And for young players, they didn't know what the future would hold. But everybody seems to have found a way now and realised that there is more to football than the Premier League clubs.
That's exactly it, and obviously there is going to be a little bit of nervousness connected to this, but Brexit in a strange way has created a different pathway for players that are looking to maybe make the bridge from junior football or academy football in the League of Ireland to go and play elsewhere in Europe, and obviously coming to England and playing Premier League or Championship is a well-trodden path, but these moves to Europe and in particularly to Serie A that you pointed out before are massive for these players because it benefits them on an individual basis and it benefits their future career as potential Irish internationals. And they'll be coming back into the youth setups with Ireland under 16, 17 and so on, bringing that experience with them, mixing with the players at that level, and then hopefully, potentially, bringing that to the senior stage under Stephen Kenny. And obviously there was a lot of, as you say, nervousness and negativity around Brexit and how that would impact these young players and the next steps that they'd be taking in their career. But it proves that there isn't just one road to take, there's many, and these are moves that we're speaking about with a lot of shock because it's involving AC Milan and Inter Milan, but these are players that are proving that they're deserving it. They're being scouted for the talent that they've got. There's still a long way to go to prove their worth playing senior football for these huge European clubs, but they're on the way to it, and more power to them if they've got the talent, if they've got the commitment and the dedication. Listening to Carl talking there, you can see that already by him. Then that's great, and it hopefully will only be a positive for them moving forward.
When you're speaking about movement, Fergal, and it is transfer deadline day, Everton got their man, Frank Lampard, 2.5 year deal for him.
Yeah, I was at Finch Farm this morning for the media call for his presentation. It's, I'd say, a kind of nervous excitement around the club. I wouldn't say he's an absolutely universal popular choice, but I do think there is a real sense that the old model just wasn't working, particularly obviously with Rafa Benitez coming in and bringing in someone that's been around the Premier League block to steady the ship and make sure they don't get dragged into a relegation battle. Lampard, they're hoping, will bring a bit of freshness. Some of the names that were linked with the job do follow that mould of, yes, they've got experience under their belt, but they don't exactly inspire a lot of excitement. Lampard is young, he has some fresh ideas. He is still quite unproven, and it is difficult to gauge and predict the future, obviously, how well he'd do, because he was good at Chelsea without being...
Oh, we have lost Fergal there, so we will come back to him in a minute. But you know what we're going to do now, Ruby? Take a very quick break.
With Green Farm. Being up to 90 isn't real. The protein in our range is. Get real.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Now we are talking football as it is transfer deadline day and there is a lot going on. Journalist Fergal Brennan is with us on the line. Fergal, we were chatting about Everton and Frank Lampard. You were at his press briefing a little bit earlier on. Was there any news on transfers? It seems like he's been busy or the club have been busy already.
Yeah, I think part of the deal to bring him in is this promise that the club have already been working behind the scenes to get a couple of deals done. Donny van der Beek, I expect, will be finished and wrapped up probably before the close of play. The window shuts at 11 o'clock tonight. That looks done. Been speaking to a contact at the club today to say that he's already there and they're doing his media stuff and his kit photos and all of that. But the big story is Dele Alli. That's a little bit further down the line in terms of being completed. Everton are doing what they can to get it sorted and get it ticked off, but it'll be an interesting one to see whether that one does inevitably go through. Van der Beek is a lot more progressed along the line and time can run quickly when you're counting down the last few hours on transfer deadline day. Dele Alli would be a big one for them to get in. He's very much in that mould of, if Lampard can get a tune out of him, if we can see the Dele Alli that we saw at the start of his Tottenham career, you've got the potential for arguably one of the best midfielders in the Premier League, but it is a big if next to his name, and I think all of that will be coming into the talks in the next couple of hours. But Everton do have to make a quick decision on it, because obviously Lampard's only just come in and the deadline is approaching and the window will be closed in a few hours. I would say Donny van der Beek is done. Dele Alli probably will get done, but it could go right the way up to 11 o'clock and maybe just after.
Plenty of rumours that there's a few clubs interested in Jesse Lingard as well. Any solid info as to where he's headed for, or is he staying put?
I think the way it's looking at the moment, and obviously these things can change between now and 11, it looks as if he might be staying. West Ham and Newcastle were the main ones that were interested in him. Obviously, he's been on loan at West Ham before and was very good for them. David Moyes was interested in bringing him back to the club. But Manchester United, I think, are playing quite a cautious card here. They're not likely to bring anyone in, I don't think, between now and when the window shuts. And I think Ralf Rangnick just wants to make sure that under no circumstances are they left short for the second half of the season. That's unfair potentially on Lingard as in a player's perspective, but Ralf Rangnick is a very cautious operator in these senses, and I think Lingard, if I was looking at it now as we stand, what are we, four and a half hours before the window closes, I think he'll probably stay. Could get resurrected in the next couple of hours, but it looks as if United are going to just, for their own sake, just keep hold of him to make sure that they're not caught short in the next few months.
Yeah, it is quite hard on him because this has been going on for the last little while. It's not like it's just today. So he clearly wants to move, but with the money and then obviously Rangnick, it's difficult being a player just staying there just in case something goes wrong and we need you. But I suppose, look, he is getting paid well for the privilege, so he's probably all right. Aubameyang, this is quite an interesting one. Potentially going to Barcelona. Is there still time to get this deal done?
This one looks to be kind of edging towards not being resolved in time. There's a lot of variables to sort out here. It is a very strange story, almost shades of Peter Odemwingie from all those years ago where he drove to try and get a move completed on his own terms. Aubameyang's flown to Barcelona on his day off. Arsenal are in Dubai at the minute on a warm weather training camp. He stayed in London, which probably tells you the story of Mikel Arteta's view on him and his future as Arsenal captain and as just a player within the Arsenal squad. But Barcelona financially are in a bit of a mess. We all know that based on the last 12 months. They have to move a lot of things around in order to get transfers done. And it would suggest to me that there isn't enough time to move enough kind of chess pieces to allow Aubameyang to come through. They'd probably have to see one or two players go, or maybe even a wage cut or a renegotiated contract. Aubameyang, even if he took a substantial wage cut, he's on huge money, in and around between 250 and 300,000 a week at Arsenal as it stands. Even if he was to halve that, Barcelona, given how frugal they have to be, they probably couldn't pay it. But the way that he's acted over this transfer, essentially taking himself to Spain to try and get this done, I think that's probably giving the hint of what's to come at Arsenal. And I think we've probably seen the last of him playing for Arsenal there, certainly this season anyway.
Have Rangers finalised the move for Aaron Ramsey?
This is a very, very odd story, and typical deadline day, a situation comes out of absolute nowhere. If you'd said to me those three words, Aaron Ramsey and Rangers yesterday, I think I would have laughed. But it does seem to have wheels under it. Rangers have been working on this all day. He's in Glasgow having a medical, and as it stands, the only thing that could block it is if there was an issue with the medical or if there was a last-minute hitch with personal terms. This looks to be almost done. I think a lot of people will look at this and say it's kind of strange because he could probably come back to the Premier League. There's a lot of teams that would maybe take him because he's experienced in the Premier League. He's a Welsh international, but he does seem to have made his mind up. It could again be potentially a wages issue. He does have big wages that maybe certain Premier League clubs wouldn't be willing to pay a 31-year-old. Rangers, if they can bring him in as a bit of a marquee player and ignite their season, they'll see it as a solid investment. But it's a very strange one. It really has come out of absolute nowhere, and Juventus are happy to let him go. It hasn't worked for him in Italy, and Rangers could be getting themselves a real shock deal if they can get it tied up between now and 11 o'clock.
One deal that is done is Christian Eriksen to Brentford. He has expressed how much he wants to be in a very good position for the World Cup, and Brentford should provide him with what he needs.
Yeah, this is a fantastic story, and it's been kind of rolling on for about a week or two that Brentford have offered him a short-term contract. He joins them until the end of the season, and he has been working on his fitness. He's been back at Ajax doing some training. Obviously, we know the story that he was essentially released by Inter Milan due to their requirements over the defibrillator that he had fitted that meant he couldn't play in Serie A because of legal restrictions. So now he's able to pick up his career again, get himself prepared for the World Cup, as you mentioned. And this is a great story because we were looking at this situation in the summer and thinking we might never even see Christian Eriksen kick a ball again. The fact that he's back and he's back in the Premier League is brilliant because he's a really talented player. And Brentford have impressed a lot of people this season. And having someone like him in their team, lots of experience, and he does have that little bit of a wow factor, a little bit of an X factor that he can just create something that can really give them something between now and the end of the season. So it's great to see him back because he's such a good player and this is such a positive story.
And there is one other news story involving a player whose name we cannot mention. Has there been any developments with that particular saga?
Yeah, obviously, as you mentioned, in terms of the wording regarding this, you have to be incredibly delicate because of media law restrictions. Greater Manchester Police have confirmed that the man arrested yesterday in his 20s on suspicion of rape and assault, they've been given an extra period of time to question the individual involved. Obviously, the wording, the reporting around this story has to be incredibly delicate as it stands. Because the situation that the trial or potentially the investigation could be jeopardised, and that's obviously sensible to take that legal position. And we hope that the legal process continues and that the claims, the allegations are investigated fully, because that is the priority here. These types of situations with football or footballers are second. The priority here is that this is properly investigated and that all charges are potentially and thoroughly looked at by the police and the Criminal Justice Service here in the UK.
Thank you very much, Fergal Brennan, and we're going to take a quick break.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Your rise and grind isn't real. Our protein is Get Real.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On with me, Marie Crowe, and Ruby Walsh. We are going to turn our attention to Gaelic games. The first weekend of the National Football League is behind us and it certainly didn't disappoint. A huge amount of excitement, lots of thrilling draws and one very big upset. And to talk about all of the weekend's action, I'm delighted to say that former Dublin football Barry Cahill joins us now on the line. Look, Barry, we are going to get straight into it. You are a former Dublin footballer. So much of the conversation since Saturday night's defeat for Dublin to Armagh, 215 to 113, has been around Dublin. What's going wrong and what will the future hold? Well, you might be able to answer some of those questions for us. So just overall, Barry, what are your thoughts on Dublin at the moment?
Yeah, Marie, I wouldn't be too alarmed just yet. Certainly on Saturday night, the performance wasn't up to scratch and obviously it was a very disappointing result, particularly probably the first half performance. The guys never got out of the blocks and didn't really look well tuned in for the game. Armagh became, you know, well-conditioned team, well-coached team, and, you know, they fully deserved their victory. They're outstanding on the night. But I think for Dublin at the moment, it's a bit of a tricky situation for Desi Farrell and his management team. I mean, it's been well documented over the last probably, you know, 12, 15, 18 months that they've lost so many multiple All-Ireland winners, you know, experienced guys who've done it and been there for the last 10 years or so. And it's never going to be easy trying to replace those guys. Thankfully, they're still the hard sort of hardcore guys within the team are still there. And some of them are only coming back over the next few weeks. But I think for Desi over the next few weeks, it's going to be difficult because, you know, Division 1 this year seems very, very competitive. And it's very condensed in terms of there's going to be 7 matches in a 9-week period. It doesn't give you a huge amount of time to experiment. And I think, you know, on the back of last year's All-Ireland semi-final defeat to Mayo, I think it was well documented that Dublin did need to find a few more players and to try and strengthen the bench in particular, because that was obviously one of Dublin's main strengths during the Jim Gavin era. So for Desi to try and strengthen that bench, he's going to have to give guys game time. But, you know, it's so cutthroat Division 1 this year that if you don't have a, you know, a very strong team out, you could come out on the wrong side of a bad enough beating. So it's going to be an interesting few weeks for Dublin ahead.
Barry, obviously I'm not an expert on GAA, but I am a fan. I watch it, listen to the experts when it's all over, read the articles in the papers this morning, and there seems to be a common consensus here. The decision making of the forwards, which was obvious to watch, wasn't up to the standard that you'd expect from Dublin. But they also question their desire, their hunger, their work rate for each other. Do you think they're fair comments?
I think they're probably a little bit harsh. Now, they were disrupted in the first half. I mean, Aaron Burns and Fina is a guy that's been touted in Dublin that he could really make a big step up this year. He unfortunately had to come off injured after 16 minutes. Cormac Costello is someone, you know, who's really been getting his game time from a starting role the last couple of years. He actually started quite lively and had 3 points to his name before coming off after 25 minutes. So things were a little bit disjointed in that sense. But I think the work rate was still fine. Certainly some of their decision-making up front around shot selection was poor. And I think, you know, when Dublin meet up again, which is either this evening or tomorrow evening, that's something that they will be speaking about and addressing. You know, we're so used to the Dublin forwards being extremely efficient on the ball. They rarely take the wrong option in terms of shooting out of position. They usually give it to the right man in the right place. And that was something that was a little bit absent, I think, on Saturday evening. But again, you know, it's a match in January. It's early days. Yeah, certainly the signs weren't great. But, you know, I think the beauty about the National League as well is the fact that when you do have a disappointing performance, you get an opportunity to try and put that right the following week because the calendar is so condensed. So I'm sure Dublin will be highly motivated as they head to Tralee now this weekend.
Is that a good or a bad week to have having to travel to Tralee down to face Kerry, who
sold out,
managed to get a draw yesterday? You know, and have teams found a way maybe of getting at Dublin?
Yeah, that's possibly true. I think, look, Kerry will probably feel that Dublin are a little bit vulnerable at the moment. Like a lot of counties, and there seems to be a little bit of giddiness around the country that Dublin are on the way out. And now is the time to get in front of them and to beat them. So I think, look, Dublin-Kerry games sort of take on a life of their own. There hasn't been a huge amount between them over the last number of years. Dublin have a phenomenal record against Kerry, and I think, you know, Desi will probably look to go with a bit more of an experienced Scott team. You know, there's still a lot of key players missing for Dublin when you think about the likes of Mick Fitzsimons, Johnny Cooper, James McCarthy, Paddy Small. Conor Connellan in particular is a game changer, so if you could get a couple of those guys back for Saturday, it will make a big difference, because, you know, in terms of, you know, blooding guys and experimenting with your team, a way to Kerry is an ideal situation to do that. But, you know, Desi's hand could be forced a little bit considering they lost a couple of players to injury in the first half. And, you know, maybe on the other hand, it's a great opportunity for guys. You're going to throw them in, and, you know, playing them in the Auburn Cup in January is one thing, but actually going down to Kerry and lads, if they're able to give a performance down there's no better demonstration that they're up to this level. So, you know, it can work both sides in that regard.
I read a great article this morning in the Irish Examiner written by Emma Fitzmaurice, where he likened Dublin's domination, I suppose, to Pep Guardiola dominating in soccer with his tic-tac model, which he had to modify to continue to be successful. Do Dublin have to make a few changes to their approach in order to get back to where they were and maybe get back ahead?
Yeah, I think, you know, your style of play always has to evolve. You know, if you go with a certain style over even a 2-year period, you're going to be found out by teams straight away. And I think, you know, Dublin over the last few years have been very innovative. They have evolved their game plan year on year, and I think for Dublin to be successful this year, they have to continue to do that. I mean, you know, a couple of years ago they were able to bring in a sort of basketball approach whereby they had players hugging the touchline and really stretched the pack defences that they came up against, particularly against the Ulster teams, and they were very clever in terms of breaking that down. So I think for Dublin, yes, they're going to have a couple of new sort of systems in place, but that takes time, and they may not get the time this year. I mean, the calendar itself is so condensed. So, like I heard last week, the welcome announcement that the ladies' Leinster final and the men's Leinster final will be on the same day this year, and the final is actually going to be in May, which struck me because I'm so used to either going to Leinster finals or watching Leinster finals in mid to late July. So it just goes to show the season is going to come, the championship is going to come around very quickly, and I think for Dublin they're going to have to get up to speed quite quickly. And I think Stephen Desi referenced it there over the weekend. You know, the league is a priority in terms of blooding players and working on game plans and systems. I don't think they have any intention of trying to win the league, but certainly they want to be going into the Leinster Championship having, you know, got a number of minutes under players' belts as they head in towards the Championship, so that he can sort of have maybe deepened his squad a little bit, so he's comfortable calling on lads with 20 minutes, 15 minutes to go, because you know, as dominant as Dublin have been, particularly during Jim Gavin's era, a lot of games did come down to the wire. And I think it was the fact that Dublin were rarely weakened at the end of a game in terms of personnel compared to the start of the game. When you think what some of the competitors that they came up against, you know, they were able to finish off these games with a Kevin McManaman coming off the bench, or Bernard Brogan, or Cormac Costello, or Paul Flynn, whoever that might be. Like, the caliber of player in Dublin just is not quite at that level. And I think you have to cut guys a bit of slack as well. You can't expect guys to come into a Dublin setup for the first year to turn it on in terms of being an All-Ireland contender. You saw the likes of Tyrone last year coming good. But for a lot of those Tyrone lads, you know, they were soldiering away for 5, 6, 7, 8 years, getting up to speed, developing, you know, year on year to try and win, to get to that level. So it does take a bit of time. And I think, you know, Dublin supporters will have to be a little bit patient in that regard. But look, I still think Dublin will be there or thereabouts come June, July time, you know, at the business end of the season. I think they'll get through the Leinster Championship and it'll come down to the knockout stages. But, you know, for any team with the likes of Brian Howard, Brian Fenton, Kieran Kilkenny, James McCarthy, Conor Callaghan, you know, if you have those guys on your team sheet, I don't think you're going to be far away.
We can't make it all about Dublin either, because a lot of the reason for Saturday night's result was the way that Armagh played and the job that Kieran McGeaney has done. And you could also see the influence of Kieran Donaghy as well and what he's brought to it. But the players themselves were absolutely superb, and you can just see the work that they've done and see it all coming together under McGeaney, almost McGeaney's vision being realised.
Yeah, absolutely, and full credit to Kieran, and also probably to the Armagh County Board, because, you know, it has taken Kieran 5, 6 years to get to this level. He was starting from a low base, but like, the Ulster Championship hasn't really gone well for Armagh for the last number of years. They showed a bit of life last year in the game against Monaghan, but, you know, in general, they've had their success against non-Ulster counties in the back door. But they've been slowly but surely making those incremental improvements, and now they seem to be right at the top level, and deservedly so. You know, Division 1 this year is going to be a massive test for them. If they can get through those 7 matches in that 9-week period and stay in Division 1, like, that will give them a huge amount of confidence as they head in towards the Ulster Championship. And, you know, it's fascinating to see that there's 4 Ulster teams in Division 1, and just shows how competitive that championship is. But I really like the attitude of the Armagh players on Saturday evening. You know, they were well able to mix it from a physical point of view, and they obviously have that strength conditioning work under their belt for the last 3, 4, 5 years, which you referenced there, Marie. But, you know, they're well able to play football as well. And I think the performance from Rian O'Neill, you know, reminded me of some of the outstanding performance of the likes of Stephen O'Neill under lights in Croke Park going back, you know, 10, 15 years ago. The point taken that he scored, the goal itself, the confidence he took to take on and slot it into the right-hand corner, you know, those were really highlights of the game. But they were able to mix it with that work rate, and, you know, I think it really bodes well for Kieran McGeaney and the management team. But really, you know, I think for any team at the moment, once you get a victory over Dublin, you know, it really does tend to give you that extra layer of confidence. So it'll be interesting to see how they get on now over the next month or so.
Every team really needs that physical edge, and they have to bring it, and I'm sure that they will bring it again now when they play Tyrone at the weekend. But is that where Kerry are lacking? Because that seems to have been some of the criticism that's coming out after their draw with Kildare. You could see Kildare brought that edge that they maybe didn't have before, the new management team in there, and, you know, they did seem like they were approaching things a little bit differently, but then Kerry seemed to lack it a little bit and just couldn't close the game out.
Yeah, I think you'd be disappointed with Kerry yesterday. I would have expected him to get the win. I know Newbridge is a difficult place to go, particularly in the winter time, and it being a tight pitch, and obviously it was a full house, I think, with all their supporters there. But I think the fact that they had a 4-point lead with the likes of 15 minutes to go, you know, they'd been running riot in the McGrath Cup. I know it's a different level, but they had been racking up really high scores. So I think that's something that Jack O'Connor and the management team would have been disappointed with, that they couldn't see out that match. And it is a criticism that has been levelled at Kerry, you know, over the last 2, 3, 4 years. I mean, they obviously had that opportunity in 2019 All-Ireland final to try and see out that All-Ireland win and couldn't get it done. And then you had the Cork game the following year, and then the Tyrone semi-final last year. So I think Kerry probably do need to add a little bit more steel. But like Jack O'Connor, I mean, there's no better man to do that. I mean, even if you go back to his first stint as a Kerry manager all the way back to 2004, he brought in the likes of Aidan O'Mahony, brought in the likes of Paul Galvin, and there was no two better guys there that brought that sort of physicality and steelness to the Kerry group, added with the brilliance of the inside forwards that they had back then. So I think it is something that they will like to try and develop over the next few weeks. And in saying that with Kildare, I mean, they have that, you know, dream team management team in place of the four guys, you know, sort of from their legendary teams in the late 90s. I think expectations have certainly risen in Kildare, and certainly when you look at Meath's result at the weekend, you'd probably think that they would be the closest contenders to Dublin in Leinster. But I think, you know, Division 1 again, as I referenced earlier, it's so competitive with these games back-to-back over that nine-week period. I think for Kildare, there'll be a lot of learnings for them over the next few weeks, but certainly a lot of confidence to be gained from the result yesterday.
Oh yeah, typical Dub. Looking down at us here in Kildare and thinking, Kerry couldn't even beat them. Oh yeah, don't worry. We're coming for the Dubs. We'll get you eventually. Mayo had some comeback as well. Barry, as quick as you can. We're a little tight on time, but it was amazing the comeback they brought about.
They did, in fairness, and they probably had the most experimental team out of all the Division 1 teams over the weekend, but just goes to show the sort of determination and steeliness in there, and particularly for a guy like Rob Henley, you know, who's had a bit of a roller coaster inter-county career, you know, for a guy who's still doing it, you know, 10 years later, saved the penalty, which probably was the key deciding factor, that if Paddy McBurdy had scored that penalty, they would have went 6 points ahead in those conditions and probably would have seen the game out quite comfortably. But to nail that free under difficult circumstances, he obviously did it last year against Dublin in the All-Ireland semi-final, wasn't an easy free, but you know, just shows the confidence in him, and that was a big result for them to get a point out of it, because you know, come 9 weeks time, there's not going to be very much between, you know, the third place team and the seventh place team in that league, and equally with the other match that took place between Tyrone and Monaghan, two evenly matched teams really, and they've had a number of close encounters over the last 2-3 years, so probably a draw in that game wasn't too much of a surprise.
Well, Barry, you could talk about Gaelic football all evening, but unfortunately we have to go. We have to take a very quick break, and we still have to talk tennis.
On 2FM with Green Farm. Rise and grind, as the hustle mindset aren't real. The protein in our chicken is. Get real.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On, and Conor Nyland has joined us on the line to talk about yesterday's Australian Open victory for Rafa Nadal. Conor, sorry we're so late getting to you. 5 hours and 24 minutes of absolute drama is what I witnessed.
Hey Ruby, yeah, it was incredible. We've only got 2 minutes here. We'll fly through it.
No, to condense 5 hours of action.
Yeah, I'll do my best. No, they took up an awful lot of day yesterday, I suppose. But yeah, Rafa looked like he was he'd been playing for 5 hours after about two games. He had the ball kids out. You know, it was wiping off the sweat off the court. His shirt was totally drenched. And I thought, gee, this could be an hour and a half. Medvedev goes through, and it was looking that way. But he just somehow managed to turn it around. It was an all-time unbelievable Rafa Nadal mental performance as well as physical.
I read Andre Agassi's book where he speaks about being on the baseline in the Arthur Ashe Stadium, 5 hours, five sets, taking 5 hours. The physical demands were incredible in those two players yesterday.
Yeah, and it was hot. It was about 30 degrees, but I just think Nadal's mental capacity as well to just stay in the moment and stay present. Like, he's just got this ability to never have a negative emotion. His body language was always so, so good. And then just to have that belief, he's nearly 36, to be able to go, I can outlast this guy, come back from two sets of love down and turn it around. When the stakes are so high, he's going for the 21 slams, goes ahead of Djokovic and Federer. And to be able to serve it out in the fifth with all that experience, knowing what can go wrong, and still be able to just press forward and get it done, it was probably the greatest Nadal performance. It's right up there with the 08 final with Federer, that sort of classic five setter. But this, for him to come from behind, he's usually such a great front runner. For him to come behind in that situation was amazing, and give himself a chance to be ahead of the other two lads at the Grand Slam tally. It's incredible.
Ash Barty took the women's title. It wasn't as dramatic, but she certainly was under as much pressure, if not more, going into it.
Yeah, I mean, you've seen even last year, I felt like she was probably the best player in the tournament, but she didn't quite come out of herself, and she went and won Wimbledon. But now she's just ticked so many boxes. She's French, Wimbledon, and now the home slam in Australia. So, you know, we could see her potentially going a real run this year. Wouldn't be surprised if she's knocking on the door of completing a slam. I know that's asking an awful lot, but it'd be interesting to see what she can do this year. We've seen Pewitt and Rafter and ex-Aussie greats really struggle to perform in Australia, but she was able to